This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Wednesday, February 20th. I'm Jeff Bossert. Coming up, we'll remember two of the first Tuskegee Airmen that trained at Chanute Air Force Base in Rantoul. And we'll have a look at your AM 580 weather forecast for Champaign-Urbana, but first a look at today's news. Governor Rod Blagojevich is facing perhaps his most difficult State of the State address yet, but he's offering no hints about what programs he'll tout or what new ideas he'll float. But the silence ends today when the governor must spell out his proposals on a long list of concerns facing Illinois. Unlike previous years, Blagojevich's office wouldn't discuss even general themes the governor plans to discuss or drop hints about new ideas he planned to promote. A souring state and national economy is slowing the money Illinois brings into its coffers, so much so that the administration says the current year's budget is $750 million in the hole. Blagojevich spokeswoman Abby Ottenhoff says, without providing details, that the governor will offer some new approaches that deal with the economic slowdown. Because legislators aren't getting an advance copy of the speech until today, Republican State Senator Dan Rutherford of Shenoah says that gives him little time to evaluate the spending plan. But he says that as the state's financial situation grows cloudy under the threat of an economic slowdown, the governor ought to compromise with lawmakers.
I truly hope that this governor comes out of the budget message with a conciliatory tone of wanting to work with the General Assembly to resolve the problems of the state that's going to benefit families of Illinois, as opposed to a confrontational bad guy, good guy approach that we've seen historically happen in the Blagojevich administration.
Democratic Representative Bob Flyder of Decatur says he wants to hear the governor admit that the state is in a difficult fiscal situation and that spending needs to be reined in. Governor Blagojevich delivers his State of the State speech and budget address today at noon. You can hear it on AM 580. The Illinois Attorney General's office has refiled its lawsuit accusing Carl and Christie Clinics of denying care to new Medicaid patients. Champaign County Judge Richard Klaus dismissed the Attorney General's original suit last month, but he did so without prejudice, meaning the suit could be refiled. Attorney General's spokesman Scott Mulford says the amended complaint should meet the judge's request for more specifics on their claim. The complaint alleges that Carl and Christie conspired to turn away Medicaid-eligible patients in order to unlawfully increase the state's reimbursement rates and speed up payment schedules. It argues that as a result, thousands of Medicaid-eligible patients in Champaign County had to pay higher rates, use hospital emergency rooms, or go without primary medical care. The two Champaign-Urbana-based clinics now have 30 days to file a response to the new complaint. A new state law allows Illinois counties to enact a special sales tax to pay for school construction, and school officials in Champaign County are beginning to study the idea. AM 580's Jim Meadows has more.
It's called a county school facility tax, a quarter cent to a penny sales tax, which, if approved by county voters, would help school districts in the county pay for building and renovating their facilities. Superintendent Todd Pence of the St. Louis Elementary School District says the tax is worth looking into because there aren't many other options for funding school construction.
There's no construction grant money out there available. You know, anybody can go into our buildings and see the age of many of them and in the needs. So it's just another way for us to come up with some money without having to go to our own taxpayers and ask for another property tax increase.
Pence attended last night's Urbana School Board meeting, where an executive with the bond brokerage firm Stiefel Nicholas outlined details of the school facility tax. Both Urbana and Champaign school officials say they want to study the idea. Getting the tax before the voters as a referendum would take action from the county board or a cooperative effort by school districts serving a majority of a county's students. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
A Vermilion County board member says she's ready to launch a campaign for Illinois' 104th House District seat. Democrat Lori DeYoung says her record of running a nonprofit child welfare agency partnered with her time on a number of civic organizations has prepared her well for a candidacy. DeYoung says education funding is her top priority, saying cities like Danville have an inadequately educated workforce, and that hurts their ability to attract and retain corporations. She also says her knack for reaching across party lines would serve the legislature well. Young says several times Republican county board members have asked her to put items on the agenda.
And they recognize that sometimes it's easier for a person in the majority to get that issue of concern on the table for discussion. And I feel like since they've come to me, they see me as a person that really is, you know, making it my priority to, you know, respond to the needs of my constituents and to the best ability possible to work in a bipartisan way.
Young is the founder of Family Education and Support Services in Danville. Elected to the Vermilion County Board in the fall of 2006, she's also served on the board of the county's health department and Oakwood School Board. DeYoung will take on Republican Danville Mayor Scott Eisenhower this fall. They're seeking a seat held by retiring Republican Bill Black. He's held the seat for more than 20 years. Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard announced the city will vie to hold the 2012 Super Bowl. The announcement marks the city's second effort to secure the honor of hosting the NFL's biggest game. Political and civic leaders said this year's bid would emphasize many of the same attributes as last year's bid. That includes Indianapolis's new retractable roof Lucas Oil Stadium and its experience hosting major sporting events like the Indianapolis 500. Officials also say the city could again generate the $25 million in private dollars that were raised before the 2007 bid presentations. For the latest newscast online, go to wyll.illinois.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Bosser. The story of the Tuskegee Airmen began as an experiment and ended by proving the ability of many African-American servicemen. The military's first black pilots withstood animosity to fight America's enemies overseas while continuing to fight racism on the home front. The next in our series, World War II Central Illinois Stories, looks at the paths taken by two of the first members of the Army Air Corps' 99th Pursuit Squadron. The Chanute Air Force Base in Rantoul was the first training ground for these officers. In this story, I spoke with the widows of two men who helped pave the way for many others. When the military expanded to allow African Americans to train towards becoming part of the war effort, Bill Thompson and Ellsworth Dansby were among the first to arrive at Chanute. The Tuskegee Airmen experiment had begun as more than 250 ground support crew made their way to Rantoul in March of 1941. And despite the inclusion of black men at the base, race kept them separate. In a 1999 interview conducted for an archive at Chicago State University, Thompson recalled how living quarters on the base were split up.
It was very friendly towards us, but at the same time, it carried out the policies of the military, and that is that we were separated and segregated.
Thompson died 2 years ago. Vera Thompson is his widow. She lives in an apartment on Chicago's South Side, adorned with plenty of her husband's military accolades and photos.
He went there to fly. He already had an application to fly. And he was quite unhappy when he could not get flight instruction, but he took what he could get.
Both Bill Thompson and Ellsworth Dansby had been turned down for formal flight training based on their skin color. This proved particularly hard for Dansby, who had basically trained himself. He took an interest in aviation as a child in Decatur, asking for a subscription to Popular Mechanics at age 3. By the time Dansby was 12, he was flying. Around that time, he was asked to take control of a plane and did without a hitch, going solely on what he read. While growing up, Dansby even conducted classes for the local YMCA in model plane building and flying at a time when the Y wouldn't accept him as a member. It wasn't until he was 27 that he got his big break, learning of the formation of a black fighter squadron. Eunice Dansby Gingrey was Dansby's wife of nearly 40 years.
He hopped on his motorcycle and took off to Rantoul as fast as he could get there. And when they accepted him immediately, he had to call home to have somebody bring up his toothbrush and everything else because he hadn't taken the thing with him.
Dansby dealt with racism most of his life, but Bill Thompson's upbringing was slightly different. He attended integrated schools in Pittsburgh. He also earned a business degree from Hampton University. Based on education and some prior flight training, Thompson was hand-picked at Chanute for the Civilian Pilot Training Program and was among the first six aviation cadets. But the majority of the men were enlisted and that was the case with Dansby. He was the very first among them and trained as a mechanic. By the fall of 1941, those at Chanute were transferred to Tuskegee, Alabama to complete their training. Dansby's widow says that's where men like her husband got a better idea of what his ancestors dealt with.
The prejudice in the area was just terrible. They couldn't go to town without going in a group. Otherwise, they didn't think they'd live to get home. And for a long, long time, the government would not assign them to combat or even into a combat zone. But finally, they sent them to North Africa.
The combined unit of Chanute ground crews and those already in Tuskegee's pilot program were called the 99th Fighter Group. When it was sent overseas, they were ignored by the white units and saw little aerial combat. No U.S. unit wanted their help. Dansby says some of that changed when British Field Marshal Bernard Montgomery saw they weren't involved and took them on their first mission. Many more black units escorted bombing raids in Austria, Poland, Hungary, and Germany. Historical accounts show the escorts lost few bombers, if any, to enemy aircraft under their watch. Members of the 99th returned home in the mid-40s and expected to see some sort of welcome ceremony. But instead, Vera Thompson says soldiers like her husband and Dansby came to believe their war service was forgotten.
Instead of coming back for a celebration, and as most of the guys were getting in those days, they had to deal with that again. So I don't know how happy that made them, but I think that might be one of the reasons they were so determined to have the legacy and see that things were taken care of back here, because they formed what is the Tuskegee Airmen Organization.
After the war, the Dansbys moved to the Chicago area for a short while, where Ellsworth began a career in the nuclear regulatory industry. The two later moved back to Decatur, where Eunice was a music teacher in the public schools. A former school administrator there may have given Dansby a sense of the recognition that he wouldn't live to see. John Mueller, a retired principal, got to know Dansby after the war.
I found out that he was with the 99th Pursuit Squadron. I said, hey, I was in the Air Force in Italy, 449th Bomb Group, and you guys flew escort for us. In fact, you might be the reason I'm standing here today.
Ellsworth Dansby was also an advocate for racial integration, serving in a number of civic and service groups. He worked various jobs in his remaining years and died at age 74 in 1989. Colonel Bill Thompson's post-war life brought him back to Chicago, where he lived briefly before the war. He earned a teaching certificate and taught for 25 years in the city's public schools. But he didn't forget what he'd accomplished and was often asked to speak about his military service. Thompson provided a large part of Chanute Air Force Base's archives of photos, documents, and medals, which historian Don Weckhorst still works to preserve today. The two first met in the early 80s during an event at the base honoring black history.
And that's when we become friends. He had pictures to share with me and some items of his recollection. And I wrote about that. And through the years, he put me in touch with other Tuskegee Airmen around the country.
Thompson would also fail to see some of the honors bestowed upon the Tuskegee Airmen. He died in April of 2006 at age 90, just months before the Octave Chanute Aerospace Museum on the old base would open an exhibit honoring the 99th Pursuit Squadron. The exhibit was made possible largely through Thompson's pictures and financial donations. Vera Thompson grew up dealing with racial struggles of her own. She was among the first blacks to graduate from what was known as Evansville College in the 1940s. She met her husband while working for the Chicago Urban League, helping African Americans find jobs in the city. Vera says she's learned to take nothing for granted in life.
Your experiences kind of get you to understand what your place is and what who's doing what, and to look over your shoulder and know what's going on, and your friends, whatever they're saying, and you learn not to expect a lot of things.
Last year, more than 200 remaining Tuskegee Airmen, men like Bill Thompson and Ellsworth Dansby, received the Congressional Gold Medal as part of ceremonies in Washington. It was the ultimate honor for these soldiers after being overlooked for more than 60 years. I'm Jeff Bossert. AM 580 News. In the forecast for the region today, very cold, partly sunny, a chance of snow in the morning, then mostly sunny this afternoon. The high around 19, blustery, with winds up to 30 miles per hour. Very cold tonight, mostly clear, the low around 4, partly sunny Thursday, a chance of snow in the afternoon, the high around 22 degrees. Not as cold Thursday night, mostly cloudy, a chance of snow, cloudy skies Friday, a high around 28 degrees, mostly cloudy Friday night, the low around 19. Partly cloudy Saturday and Saturday evening with a high around 35, the low around 18. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Wednesday, February 20th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, wiol.illinois.edu. I'm Jeff Bosser, AM 580 News.